Welcome back to Accelerando. I'm Paula Tuttle. And for those of you that have been listening to my podcast for almost 2 years, you might remember my first podcast about orchestral auditions. Well, I wanted to replay it for a few reasons. This past week, Daniel Kahneman died. And not only was he a really great thinker and a great man, it was his book, Thinking Fast and Slow, that was the biggest source for the ideas I put forth for what I claim is needed change in the orchestra audition procedure. All the ideas were mine, but it was Kahneman's breakthrough theories that led me to write that podcast. My second reason for replaying this pilot episode, if you will, it's actually helpful to me because I'm on an audition panel this month, maybe two, and I can confirm it's a very difficult process listening to candidates behind a screen and ranking them against one another. I'm also proud of the fact that the musicians listening and ultimately judging the applicants voted to keep the players anonymous. If you read Kahneman's book, you'll know this is a good idea, and it's better in so many ways. And my last reason, and maybe my best reason for replaying the episode, is I'm really busy this week, and I probably don't have enough time to write and edit an episode. We're rehearsing and performing every day this week with Pittsburgh Ballet Theater and Pittsburgh Opera. I have a subject in mind, but with the passing of Danny Kahneman, I wanted to take the opportunity to take a moment. And now as I'm in my studio recording this, I'm hearing rain on the roof, wondering if the universe is weeping for Danny Kahneman. His papers and books, they debunked our most widely held assertions about people's behaviors and their decision-making processes. The movie Moneyball was based on his ideas, and as a result, the baseball industry has turned itself upside down. His book, Thinking Fast and Slow, is now read by most baseball managers and a lot of other people. Could orchestra auditions go through the same kind of metamorphosis? Let's find out. Thanks for listening. Here's the episode. Whether you're a musician in a youth orchestra, community orchestra, or a professional organization, you've played an orchestral audition. And the process is pretty much the same wherever you go. You play a solo, sometimes it's your choice, and then you play from a list of orchestral pieces. Anyone who sits on the audition panel knows what it feels like to be in the hot seat. The players are performing for a few minutes, but the music was practiced for hundreds of hours. The committees are striving to keep their rankings fair, and everyone is trying to keep their wits. It's a grueling process on both sides of the screen, distilling months of practice down to a few moments that will determine the whole future of a player, and ultimately the future of the orchestra too. As the auditionee, you can be prepared, but your outcome is left to chance. You could be having a good day, or maybe you're tired and jet-lagged, and even more on point, where did you fall in the lineup? Orchestras sometimes audition over 100 candidates for one position. If you play right before lunch, your audition won't be viewed the same as the person right after lunch. Experienced committee members are aware of this and take this into account, but there's lots of evidence that says it's not possible. Especially when we are tired, the mind will do what it wants to do. According to psychologist Solomon Ash, it is natural to make assumptions about a person based on first impressions. In his classic approach to this idea, he lists attributes of two people in a different order. Ted, intelligent, industrious, impulsive, critical, stubborn, and envious. Joe, stubborn, critical, envious, impulsive, industrious, and intelligent. Most people, when looking at these two candidates, would choose Ted over Joe, but the lists are identical, just ordered differently. Musicians do know this. Always put your best foot forward, and you can never make up for a bad first impression. But Ash's treatise expounds even further. If we like or dislike a person, we start to imagine other qualities about the person without any evidence. Let's think about that. A player spent hundreds of dollars to make a live appearance and got a little nervous, and maybe a few tired committee members are grading the person on their first impression. The term halo effect has been used in psychology for well over a century. The more official term is exaggerated emotional coherence, and it's the tendency to like or dislike everything about a person, including things you have not observed. 2002 Nobel Prize winner for economic sciences, Daniel Kahneman, knew all about the halo effect. Yet when he was grading his students' exams, he noticed this halo effect. If the first essay was excellent, then all the essays were viewed in a better light. If the first essay was weak, well, the following essays suffered a lower grade than they deserved. At some point, he changed his method by reading the same essay answers from each student before moving on to the next essay answers. He kept the grades out of sight, writing them on the back cover of the book. After doing this for a while, he became more confident in his grading decisions because he wasn't influenced by an irrational halo effect. Could auditions be done in a similar manner? Maybe. The thought of revamping the process is exhausting. All the orchestras in the AFM can look at each other's audition clauses, so there's no reason to reinvent the wheel. Or maybe it's time to reinvent the wheel. Lots of orchestras listen to candidates by tape or video in the early rounds. This is a great idea since it saves the candidate a ton of time and money, and they can have their best work reviewed. Having live and taped auditions in the same round has problems, but if all the candidates are taped, audio only, it would be easier and more efficient. One violinist from the Cleveland Orchestra, Eric Eichhorn, said he put much more weight on the concerto than the excerpts. I get that, and hearing it in a hall would make more sense. But the excerpts? Wouldn't they be better on tape since they were never intended to be performed solo in a big, empty hall? Orchestral excerpts are meant to be played in an orchestra. A couple of times, I watched an audition for ballet dancers, which looked a lot like a regular ballet class, the first thing dancers do every day with their company or class. All the auditionees assembled in a ballet studio starting at the bars. The auditioners, the ballet masters, walked freely about the room, viewing the individual dancers in close proximity. Later, the bars are taken away and the dancers move to the center where they dance in groups. Finally, the last part, from the corner, this is where the dancers go one at a time as soloists. If orchestra players were to audition this way, they would begin by playing in the orchestra, then play in a chamber group, and then as a soloist. Maybe orchestras can improve their process by acknowledging these problems. We should take advantage of 2 years of isolation, learning to record, streaming, and Zooming. Players have gotten better at recording themselves, and committee members have become used to viewing performances virtually. So this next step is obvious. Orchestras can listen to auditions, putting excerpts side by side if they use some technology. And there are online platforms that can help. If someone, say management, organized the taped excerpts, they could send them out to the committee one at a time. There is a platform called Discourse. It's designed to be interactive. A video from the organizer along with written text could accompany a single excerpt, along with a prompt or a call to action for each excerpt to be deliberated. Rinse and repeat. Voila, a new system that keeps the panel fresh and the excerpts ordered in a methodical fashion. One thing this doesn't take into account, authenticity. We're talking Pro Tools, pitch control, reverb, and ways to enhance an audio tape. At some point, we need a live, online audition platform to ensure performances are legitimate. Now we are talking about Sonobus, CleanFeed, and other platforms that have really great audio for live interaction. These sites were invented for people that wanted to rehearse remotely during the pandemic. They have very high quality audio with low latency. All the bandwidth is dedicated to the audio signal. You can record auditions right on the platform. The manager can group individual excerpts and deliver to the committee on Discourse. For this, we're going to need a technical engineer. Maybe every orchestra will have a new position, audition engineer. The engineer can meet with the candidate online, capture the next round for the committee, start with an informal chat on Zoom to verify the player's identity, then record on Sonobus. The player could even get a few takes, like when you get your driver's license picture. Now the manager sends out taped excerpts that are known to be authentic. For the world-class orchestras, they can audition worldwide, maybe talking to players on Zoom, which is much more personal than a one-page resume, and finally inviting finalists, expenses paid, to come play with the orchestra for a week. This way they could hear many more candidates. One last thought. If travel and in-person limitations have increased audition headaches, maybe the pandemic has opened a new door. We should embrace the technology that can improve auditions, make us better panelists, take the financial burden off the applicants, and ensure less interruptions. Well, that's it for this week. I'll post a couple of books by Danny Kahneman in the show notes at accelerandocast.com. I'm really looking forward to hitting my 100th podcast very soon. I'm also looking forward to the next 100. I'm lining up some interviews you'll want to hear, and maybe you know someone else who wants to hear. Don't hold back sharing the episodes, because you aren't giving anything up when you share it. Please keep supporting live music, and we'll see you next time. Bye.